think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 197 of Low Limit Football on this 2nd of April, 2018, on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we're going to discuss when Zlatan does Zlatan things. We're going to look back at Der Klassiker, or for Borussia Dortmund, Der Disaster. Juventus extended their lead in the only title race left in the top five leagues in Europe. Chelsea mailed it in on the weekend as they are the only team in the top nine in the EPL to lose on the weekend. Sevilla almost hands Barcelona their first league loss of the season, but then it was Messi time. And we will discuss Champions League as it returns this week with our very special guest, Mr. David Mossy from Fox Sports and Sirius XM, who will be joining me tonight. I want to bring in my co-host, Mr. Rojas. What is going on? Rob, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you?
Good, good. You know, a couple things. We had the pleasure of speaking with Jonathan Johnson again yesterday from beIN Sports and ESPN FC. We released our France preview of the World Cup. It is our 20th. World Cup show that we've done. That is up on our website. You can go and check that out anytime. Great to talk to Jonathan. Great to catch back up with him. And really, you know, we talk about Germany, we talk about Spain, we talk about Brazil, we talk about Messi and Argentina. We kind of forget about France, don't we?
No, because I think, and this is no disrespect to France at all, but they've always been one of the top teams in the world, if you compare them to Germany, Argentina, Brazil.
Yeah, but they don't roll off your tongue as, like, when you're talking about favorites to win the World Cup. They don't roll off right off the bat. And I was having a chat tonight with Stel Stiliano from Shoot the Defense. We were talking about this a little bit, and I told him, I think this French side might be 2 years away, might be the Euro contender. You know what I mean? Might for 2020, that might be when we look at this French side and go, wow, this thing is, yeah, these guys are big. But I don't want to give too much away from the pod that we recorded yesterday, but, you know, we talked about Didier Deschamps. We talked about complacency, right, Rob? And we'll have to see what France does in a little under 100 days, right?
Yeah, less than that, 70 days until the World Cup.
Yeah. One other thing I want to mention today is the 6-year anniversary of the passing of Giorgio Chinaglia. It's kind of fitting that we're talking to somebody from SiriusXM FC. I know that Charlie Stilettano, who does the International Champions Cup here in the U.S., he works for Relevant Sports, somebody I would really love to have on this show one of these days, hint, hint. It was very, very close with Giorgio, co-hosted with Giorgio Chinaglia. Giorgio Chinaglia, of course, New York Cosmos, Lazio, Italian national team. I mean, he's known throughout the world. But we lost him on this day 6 years ago. So, you know, just reflecting back on Giorgio and what he's given to the world of football over his lifetime, that's for sure. Rob, you want to jump into opening thoughts? No, actually, I'm sorry. Before I get there, man, I'm running ahead. Let's do some trivia tonight, man. Let's get the show on the road. What do you think?
Yep. All right. I got a good one for you. And this is we're going to continue the World Cup discussion that we just had regarding France. And the following is this: 178 players have won the World Cup from 1986 to 2014. And of those 178 players, they have come from 9 different leagues. Can you name the league that has the most players to win a World Cup?
The league that has the most players?
To have won the World Cup since 1986. So 86, 90, 94, 98, 2002, 2006, 2010, 2014. They had 178 players from 9 different leagues. Can you name the league that had the most players?
I think I might have this one. I think I might actually have this one.
All right, we'll see.
I've got a somewhat semi-educated guess.
And just to make sure, mm-hmm. they are a top 5 league, and their country have won the World Cup before.
So now let me cross that name out. I was going with Brazil to start because, you know, Brazil's a 2-time champion in that time frame. You know, but there's also another country that is a 2-time champion in that bunch as well. So, all right. Well, I mean, that's a great question. We'll have to see where that leads us in the next 60 to 90 minutes. So that's a good one, though, Rob. I do like that one. We'll have to see. Let's see how we do. So let's hit opening thoughts, right? And last week we talked about opening thoughts, right? And our opening thoughts was centered around Mr. Zlatan Ibrahimovic and his arrival at MLS, right? He was signed by the LA Galaxy. We talked about his impact on the league. We talked about the whole retirement move. We talked about all those things. And on Monday, you know, or actually during the week, he arrived on Thursday. We thought to ourselves, well, maybe he might get in. I think I even typed the comment to you, Rob, in chat before the game that Ibra will definitely get into this game because I'm sure somebody at Fox made a phone call to somebody at MLS, said, listen, the guy's got to play, right? He's got to get in there. It's a marketing thing. It's got to be done. So I typed that to you before the game started. Mm-hmm. There was speculation on whether he would play, whether he wouldn't play, how much he would play. Everyone was saying 10 minutes, 20 minutes. You know, they weren't giving him a ton of time, but he was going to get in. But I believe 70, and I don't have the match stats in front of me, so 71st minute, I'm guessing it was in the 70-ish minute. Ibra gets on, right? And we have an audio clip, first time we're going to probably do this, from Fox Sports, from the broadcast of the game. This is in the 77th minute, and I'll let you guys listen.
Kamara throwing his body in, it's going to fall for Ibrahimovic! Oh, come on! Come on!
That's from Fox Sports. That was from the broadcast. The first goal Zlatan Ibrahimovic scores in MLS in an LA Galaxy jersey, quite possibly goal of the year when all is said and done. A 40-yard volley that it just you heard the reaction from you know from Fox Sports. Just a ridiculous goal. So tonight's topic or the opening thoughts topic is Zlatan don't hurt him because Rob, in that point in the match, 77th minute. The LA Galaxy were on the comeback trail, the proverbial comeback trail. They were down 3-0. It was the Carlos Vela show in the first half of this game. And they insert Ibra down, I think he comes on down 3-2. But at one point, LAFC comes out to a 3-0 lead. He comes on at 3-2, scores the last two goals of the game. The game tying goal, which was that magical goal that you just heard, and the game winner, and it's all of a sudden it's Zlatan's world, and we're all just living in it. I mean, Rob, could this guy have had a bigger debut in any league in the world than what he did on Saturday?
Actually, he can't because he has done this in other leagues in the world where he has scored on his debut. He scored on his debut at Ajax. He scored his debut at Juventus, scored at Milan, Barcelona, PSG, Manchester United, and now LA Galaxy is the next team to make that list. So yeah, I mean, there haven't been much more impressive debuts, and definitely shut us up when we were talking about him and his impact. Boy, I mean, I don't think there's a lot of players in world football that can do that, with certain exceptions. But to do that, and the way to score, my God, 40 yards out, to announce yourself to basically the world and MLS and the city of Los Angeles. And I think the quote says it all when he came in. You know, the fans were chanting, "We want Zlatan, we want Zlatan." So I gave him Zlatan.
I know. According to Matt Santangelo, I know he's missed a couple of spots here. But Ibrahimovic, let me ask you this. He scored one goal in every debut except the LA Galaxy one. And which team?
Inter.
PSG versus Lorient. Inter scored one goal against Fiorentina. When he debuted for Juve, it was one goal.
He didn't score on his debut at PSG?
No, he scored two goals in his debut for PSG. Scored a goal for Barca against Sporting Gijón. Scored a goal for Man United against Bournemouth. And obviously the two goals on the weekend. Just a ridiculous, ridiculous scene. Let me ask you this. Is what we saw there the exception or the rule for Zlatan?
At the moment, and the way as well that he scored those goals, because I don't think if you remember the show, but there was debate about the use of VAR as well.
Yes. I did see on the second goal.
Right.
And on the second goal, there were actually Taylor Twellman, I think the next day, posted a photo that was really like, from what it looked like it was in line. And the ball was ahead of Ibra when it was being kicked. So I know there was a question of VAR, but the goal that was the photo that was shown showed him to be onsides.
So. There you go. Yeah. So yeah, I would say that he is an exception because of the way that he is such a polarizing and interesting character. That you know, and obviously you know, great players like to demonstrate themselves. Like all, like the great phrase, "Can you talk? You could talk the talk, but can you walk the walk?" And I think Ibra is certainly the exception, talented individual that he is, the charismatic character that just proves of how big he is to the world.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, and you don't expect anything less from Ibrahimovic, and for him to do it in LA, you know, to do it on that stage where we've got this LA derby. I know for the most part they've dubbed it El Trafico based on the traffic around LA. I know some people have taken exception to that that name or whatever, but for the most part, the media is using that, the generalized media is using that as the title for this derby, and so we'll call it El Trafico. But you know, boy, talk about on the big stage, the first time this derby is being played, the huge start that LAFC gets out to, the 3-0 lead, the comeback for the Galaxy, and you got to remember, the Galaxy is a team that has really been, you know, you think about last year's performance, it was awful. You know, you never expected that kind of performance out of the LA Galaxy. And then to sign Ibra, to have this happen, it was the perfect marriage of Hollywood, wasn't it? I mean,
I mean, the guy would make millions if he was an actor, Ibra. But yeah, this has the perfect setting of a true Hollywood movie. And what better way to do it than in Los Angeles?
Yeah, you know, listen, with his connections at this point, I'm sure someone's going to eat that script up. You know, and try to at least market or do something with it. But, it was a phenomenal, I mean, and let's also not take away from the goal. The goal was phenomenal, dude. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. So it's not something that was like a cheesy goal or a cheap goal. I mean, he scored a similar goal for PSG. I got to say it was about 3 years ago now, right, Rob?
Right.
You know the goal I'm thinking of. I can't remember who he scored it against. But he did score a similar goal, and it was phenomenal. And I think even that one they were talking about his goal of the year. But I mean, at this point, Rob, it's hard to say that. And what's funny is Carlos Vela. I think it was the first goal he scored was a ridiculous goal. Remember?
It was a bomber.
Yeah, from the he swung it around in the opposite corner. It was a phenomenal goal. And then all of a sudden, you know, the big stage, man. This game had all the makings of dramatic TV. And you know, I guess for everybody that wants to poo-poo on the MLS and their system and their setup and everything, we need to take this moment for what it was. And it was just a fantastic footballing moment or a fantastic footballing match. And it was on this soil. And it was great to watch. So.
Rightly so.
Yeah. You know what? Let's let's, you know, why don't we bring in our guest here, because I'm definitely excited to get him on the show. Somebody that I've listened to in the past, you know, on SiriusXM FC, that I want to get the chance to talk to him. And as soon as we get him connected. Hi, David. It's Joe Uccello from Low Limit Football. How are you?
I am good.
Good, man. Thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it. We were talking about Ibrahimovic here and his wonder goal, and really the completion of the comeback for the LA Galaxy against LAFC. I know you're obviously working with Fox and working with SiriusXM FC, and I want to get into that in a minute. But I want to ask you your thoughts on the Ibra goal, his debut, and just the whole thing in general.
It was absolutely incredible, because as great a career as he's had, the last 12 months did leave room for a little bit of doubt about whether he could still perform. He had the injury at United. He was out for 7-8 months. He came back. The few times he played this season, he did not look good. They seemed perfectly willing to let him out of his contract to come to MLS. It didn't seem like Mourinho thought he could contribute anymore this season. So there was a little bit of doubt. And look, it's only one game. It's only 20 minutes. But still, I think he went a long way towards answering it. That 3-3 goal, I mean, that goes into his catalog. He's had some amazing ones over the years. There's one with Ajax where he dribbled about five guys in the box. There's that incredible long-distance bicycle kick against England in a friendly with Sweden in 2012. But that one was right up there. That was an incredible goal.
Yeah, it certainly was, no doubt about it. So I just want to, you know, chime back in to all our listeners. I introduced you as David Mossy, but to me, I've always known you as Statman Mossy from the WTF podcast with Mr. Eric Winalda, and obviously still working with SiriusXM FC. My question to you is tell me about your time with Eric doing the WTF show, and what's going on now for you at SiriusXM FC and Fox Sports.
Well, Eric and I knew each other from Fox, so they approached him about doing a show, and he decided he wanted to do it with me, which I was very appreciative of. So we did it for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then Eric just felt like he had too much on his plate between Fox, and he's got six kids, and there was some coaching stuff percolating at the time. So he felt like he needed to step away from the radio. So that's what happened. It was Eric's choice, essentially, to walk away. And, you know, I've been in sort of a holding pattern with Sirius since, trying to get back on there. But in the meantime, I'm doing this podcast now for Fox with Alexi Lalas. So I've gone from one washed up former U.S. international to another. So it's called the State of the Union podcast. It's a weekly deal. So I'm still managing to get my thoughts out there. But yeah, still would love to get back on the air with Eric at some point. We're still in touch. We're still good friends. I talked to him actually on the phone a couple of days ago. So yeah, so that's, and then in Fox, you know, I work as a researcher and writer, helping cover everything from the Champions League to the Europa League to the Bundesliga to the FA Cup, and obviously the World Cup this summer, so that keeps me busy as well.
Oh, we're going to definitely pick your brains about Champions League tonight, that's for sure, so with everything being up front and center. But definitely, for one, I'm one that misses you. I know that you guys on the East Coast were on at 7 p.m., so there were nights where I wasn't catching you because, you know, being home, I work on the road. But it was, you know, it was always great to listen to you guys. And I always thought the banter between you and Eric was phenomenel, you know, but intelligent, too. That's the thing. We had Eric on the show once a couple of years back. And I know that many people have like this this view of Eric that was not favorable. But when we got the chance to talk to him on the show, I was like, wow, this guy knows way more about soccer than you think he knows. And just a phenomenal mind, and I know that the banter between the two of you always brought that out. So it was definitely fun to listen to. I want to turn it over to my co-host Rob, because I know we want to jump into Champions League now and get to really the nitty gritty that's going on this week. So Rob, go ahead, man.
Absolutely, and the big nitty gritty matchup, I think, and perhaps for many people, is this debatable, probably the toughest matchup to call up, and that's Liverpool-Manchester City, the all-English derby happening in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. And just a few things to look into, David and Joe. Of course, you know, Manchester City have been on this dominant streak of finally getting to capture not just the Premier League or the FA Cup or Capital One Cup, but, you know, well, they're out of the FA Cup, sorry, but get the Champions League as well, you know, something that they've wanted to for that long-term goal that they've had ever since the Sheikhs bought the club a couple of years ago. And with a manager like Pep Guardiola, they have just been phenomenal to watch all season long. But they do take on a Liverpool side who have also been phenomenal, you know, with their with wonderful players like Roberto Firmino and Mohamed Salah, who we can talk for days, and a great manager like Jurgen Klopp. You know, they are the only team to have beaten Manchester City in league play. And the one argument that Joe made and was talking to me about for a couple of weeks now is that many people believe that Liverpool are the best team to beat this Manchester City side because of their abilities to work on the counter. So, David, I just want to jump in real quick. You know, do you believe in that case? Do you think that Liverpool are the best team when it comes to the counter and able to beat this Manchester City side? You know, I just want your take on this draw heading up this week.
Absolutely. This is a scary tie for Manchester City. Liverpool beat them that great 4-3 game in January. They go at them more than other teams do who just sit back. They have weapons, as you mentioned, Salah, Mane, Firmino, that can hurt them. Klopp has a pretty good record against Pep over the years, better than any other manager. It's 5 wins, 2 draws, 5 losses. And listen, this reminds me a little bit of the Arsenal Invincibles in 2004 went out in the quarterfinals to Chelsea. Sometimes you might be the dominant team in your domestic league, but when you face a domestic rival in Europe, it has a whole different feel to it. So, and it's going to be an electric atmosphere at Anfield for this first leg. I think City are clearly the favorites. It would not shock me at all, though, if Liverpool won this tie.
No, definitely. And one argument I want to make, obviously, you know, Liverpool, you know, haven't won a European title in, I believe, now 13 years. 2005 was the last time. You know, many people want to point this team, you know, given the great performances that they've been having in the Premier League, you know, what they're doing in the FA Cup, in the EFL, or what they did in the EFL Cup, and obviously in the Champions League this time around. You know, many people are not putting them into, you know, maybe one of the favorites to win this Champions League. But, you know, you mentioned that they have the ability to beat this Manchester City side between two legs. And Joe, I mean, I'll jump to you quick before we talk to David about this. But you feel that this Liverpool side is a sleeper to win this Champions League, you know, especially maybe afterwards if they do knock out Manchester City in this tie?
It's tough to say sleeper at this quarterfinal level. I mean, we're looking at 8 teams that you know, other than maybe Sevilla, and that's a big maybe, and we'll talk about them a little later on and what they did to Barca this weekend. You know, all of these teams, if they lifted the trophy at the end of this run, you wouldn't really be entirely surprised. Now, Liverpool, I think, would be the second choice, the second from the bottom choice, because you start to ask questions about them, you know, defensively. You start to ask questions about them with, you know, goaltending and that sort of thing. So you start to wonder, can they do it? But they are so prolific offensively. Mo Salah is leading Europe in goal scoring right now. I mean, it's just, and they're doing this all without, you know, with Philippe Coutinho, who they sent over to Barcelona. It's a testament to their attacking ability. And really, you've got to think this is one of the best jobs Jurgen Klopp has done. I mean, David, I want to throw it over to you. I don't know that I'd like to call them a sleeper. It might be a surprise if they won it all, but I don't know that I want to call them a sleeper.
Yeah, they're probably in between. I think Sevilla and Roma are the two outsiders at this stage. And then you've got heavyweights like Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern, Juventus, City, based on what they've done this season. Mm-hmm. Liverpool are sort of in between. I wouldn't call them a sleeper, but I wouldn't call them one of the favorites either. I actually think it's a bit of a stretch for them to win the Champions League this season. Like, they might get past City because they match up well against them. They know them well. But if they ran into a Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern, I think they'd be decided underdogs in that tie. There's still some work there for Klopp to do before they get to the point where I think they could seriously think about winning the Champions League.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. Let's move on to the second matchup that we're going to see tomorrow, and that's the Juve-Real Madrid matchup. Obviously, this is a rematch of last year's Champions League final where, for me as a Juventino, at 1-1 at the half, I really felt like Juve had Real Madrid right where they wanted them. It was a 1-1 that benefited Juve, or at least Juve was the better team in the half, and then Real Madrid in the second half just remembered who they were and just totally overtook the match. So looking back on that, what kind of things can Juventus take from that experience that might help them in their matchup tomorrow?
Well, you know, Real Madrid, they've switched to a 4-4-2 lately, and you could see the first hints of that in last season's Champions League final. We're actually going to show in our pregame show on Fox tomorrow Zinedine Zidane's halftime speech from that game, and it's all him telling his players to get wide and attack Juve down the flanks and try to pin them back. And, you know, I think that's going to be a similar approach tomorrow. So Juventus are going to have to be careful with that. Now, there's no Pjanic who's suspended to help them control the midfield. So we'll see which way Allegri goes there. Is it going to be Bentancur or Marquisio? So that's a problem. It's going to be fascinating to see who Real Madrid starts in these two legs, because he's got so many options now. Bale's come into form. He had two goals over the weekend. Isco obviously put on that show, a hat-trick against Argentina, which was kind of a message to Zidane that he wants to be back in the starting lineup.
Right.
But Zidane has kind of fallen in love with this 4-4-2, and I almost feel like Asensio and Lucas Vazquez are the most suited to play that role because they're so good down those flanks. So we'll see. We know Benzema is an untouchable, obviously Ronaldo. So you start running out of spots there, obviously Casemiro, Kroos, Modric, and he's got a lot of players to choose from. But so, listen, as a Juventino, you can't count out Juventus. They have so many great champions. It'd be great to see Buffon win the Champions League this season. But I actually think Real Madrid are solid favorites in this tie. I think they kind of got their mojo back in that PSG series, and they're even playing well in La Liga now. So I think they're clear-cut favorites here.
Yeah. Shame on you. But, I'm going to reformulate my last question on this match, because I was going to ask you about Miralem Pjanic. So, you know, obviously the logical options are going to be Marquisio. They're going to be Bentancur. You could even make an argument for Stefano Sturaro to be that replacement for Pjanic, although not quite as suitable in that role as the other two. So who would you rather see? I mean, obviously Marquisio, tons and tons and tons and tons of experience. He bleeds Bianconeri, for the team. He came up in the system. Obviously, Bentancur, much, much younger. His first season in Italy, coming over from I believe, Argentina, if I remember correctly. So who do you think is better suited to take that spot from Pjanic for this match tomorrow?
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost similar to the center back debate PSG had against Real Madrid of Thiago Silva versus Kimpembe. Do you go for the experience or do you go for the younger, more explosive guy with the fresher legs?
It killed them because they used Kimpembe and it killed them. So
I would go Bentancur. I'm a big fan of his. If Uruguay are actually my sleeper to win this World Cup, but we can talk about them in a little bit if we go to World Cup. But I'm a big fan of Bentancur, so I like his quality that he brings. I would actually play him. And then we'll see. I guess it'll be Khedira, Bentancur, Matuidi, right? And that would leave Douglas Costa, Dybala, and Higuain. So that lineup to me gives you some nice balance there. I don't think it doesn't sound like Mandzukic or Cuadrado will start this game. So you have two good options on the bench there. But so I would probably go Bentancur.
Okay. And and the last match that we'll talk about, David, is obviously I think the big one that many people are also focusing on. On Wednesday as well, you have this big game of Liverpool Manchester City, but then you also have at the same time Barcelona Roma. And now, these are two different sides going into different situations. Roma hasn't lost in the last 10 games in all competitions. They did knock out Shakhtar Donetsk in that tie in the round of 16, but Barcelona, they've only lost one game, and that was a game against Espanyol in the Copa del Rey, where they had to come back and win. But, we're everyone's trying to make the debate of, oh, Manchester City's the best in the world, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. But this Barcelona side is unstoppable, that they can go on to win the treble or anything like that, just losing one game. It's incredible. And we saw what, Sevilla almost did over the weekend, where they were up 2-0, and then it was the Lionel Messi show and Luis Suarez getting a 2-2 draw yesterday. So, can anyone stop this Barcelona side? Not just Roma, but can anyone stop this team in the world?
I think Barcelona are prohibitive favorites to win this tie. I can't see them not moving on from this. And then same for Bayern, by the way, against Sevilla. So I think the real drama here is, as we mentioned, Liverpool, City, and Juventus, Real Madrid. But on Barcelona, it's a different kind of team than we've grown accustomed to. It can make for an awkward watch at times. They don't dominate games from start to finish to the degree that they used to. They do it in spurts, sometimes for entire halves, but you're going to have chances against them. They're going to have to absorb pressure at different times. They've been able to do it because PK and Umtiti have been phenomenal at the back. Now, Umtiti's really lost his form here the last couple of games. He's dealing with a bit of a thorny contract issue there with the front office, so that might be affecting his play on the field. But still, they're stronger defensively than they've been. They're more balanced. Who would have thought Paulinho has actually been a very good acquisition? They've switched to more of a 4-4-2 with Paulinho and Busquets and Iniesta and Rakitic. Even when Dembele stepped in for Paulinho, it wasn't as a striker in a 4-3-3. He played him as a wide midfielder in a 4-4-2. So interesting how both Valverde at Barca and Zidane at Real Madrid have really kind of fallen in love with that formation. But so it's a different kind of Barcelona team. So that's maybe why people aren't talking them up as much. It's not that champagne football we've been grown accustomed to. And they're more reliant on Messi than they've ever been before. It's unbelievable. You saw it again this weekend. They had to bring him on to rescue them. That second leg against Chelsea, I almost feel like if Messi had switched sides, that game would have been 3-0 Chelsea with the chances they created. But so the degree to which they're relying on Messi, I guess, is a little bit of a concern, but not a bad guy to rely on, though.
I mean, do you think Messi can carry them? I know that we've watched Argentina, the national team, over the years, you know, ride the Messi train. They tried to ride it against Germany in the 2014 World Cup. They tried to ride it twice against Chile in the Copa America and just weren't able to get over the hump. I mean, and it's really... I mean, as blatant as it looks at, like for Barcelona, it looks even worse when it's Argentina, because it literally looks like 10 guys standing around and praying that Messi gets through and scores. You know, we don't see that quite as much. We don't see that ultra reliance on Messi at Barcelona that we do see with the at least in my opinion, with the Argentinian national team. So, you know, can the Iniestas of the world, can the Suarezes of the world, even the Ousmane Dembeles who's starting to come back into the form, can those guys actually do what they need to do to help Messi and give the guy a break?
Yeah, it's a different kind of Barcelona team compared to the ridiculously high standards they've set over the last decade, but there's still a lot of quality there. So I don't think he has to carry things to quite to the degree that it looks like he's going to have to for Argentina this summer. So, yeah, I think the way he's playing and there's enough help there, that, yeah, I would put Barcelona right up there. I think they have an excellent chance to win the Champions League this season.
No doubt about it. The last match I want to talk about for Wednesday is the Sevilla-Bayern matchup that, you know, you look at these two teams, it's on the weekend, it's really a tale of two cities. Bayern just absolutely dismantles Borussia Dortmund 6-0. I mean, that wasn't even fair. The way that match went off. And then Sevilla, like we just talked about 2 seconds ago, were leading 2-0 in the 88th minute against Barca, handing them their first loss of the season in league. And then, like I said in the opening monologue, it was Messi time. It was the Messi show, and him and Suarez, 2 goals, a minute apart, and thanks for playing, but we're still unbeaten. So do either of those teams, Sevilla on the down and Bayern on the up, are any of them capable of, well, at least in Sevilla's minds, reversing what happened to them on the weekend, or Bayern carrying that momentum through to the Champions League matchup on Wednesday?
Yeah, no, this tie to me is Bayern all the way, and Sevilla have a big, big miss tomorrow. Ever Banega is suspended. We'll see who Montella goes with up top, whether it's Muriel or Ben Yedder, who obviously scored those 2 goals at Old Trafford. But regardless of who he puts up there, Bayern are just lights out right now. Now, look, when a team dominates a league to the degree that they have the Bundesliga, you question, are they that good? Is the rest of the league that bad? And I think it's fair to ask that question with the Bundesliga this season. So we'll see. Bayern have had a bit of an easy ride here with Besiktas and now Sevilla. The acid test is going to come against Barcelona or Real Madrid in the next round. They've gone out the last 4 years to a Spanish club. So, but no, they should have enough to get through this tie. They are playing with tremendous confidence right now. Jupp Heynckes just seems to have the magic touch there. The latest thing he's unveiled is he's playing James Rodriguez as like a deep-lying playmaker, and James is flourishing in that role. Heynckes has figured out a way to fit James, Muller, Robin, Ribery, and Lewandowski into the same lineup, which is just ridiculous firepower. And so, yeah, I like everything that Bayern are doing right now. I certainly think they get past Sevilla. And like I said, then we'll see against the Barcelona Real Madrid in the next round.
Right.
So I'll jump in here real quick, guys, and talk about the World Cup a little bit. Obviously, we have 2 more months before the start of the best tournament in the world. And I want to talk about, you know, looking into, I guess, more of a generalized question. Obviously, you know, I do have the odds right here. I'm going to start with the favorites and then the other five teams outside of it. So the top five favorites to win the World Cup as it stands in order. Brazil, the favorites to 4-1, then followed by Germany, France, Spain, and Argentina make up that top five. Then when you look at the other remaining of the list of the basic top 10, you have Belgium at 11-1, then England, Portugal, Uruguay, and then Croatia. Given the performances that all of these teams have had, you know, Argentina lost to Spain over the international break, you know, you saw Portugal lose to the Netherlands, you saw Croatia lose a couple of games, you know, and with the exception of other teams as well, you know, David, I mean, I'll jump to you real quick as well. You know, do you agree with that list of whether it be the top five favorites or the top five, I guess, outsiders out of that? You know, is there something that maybe a team is too high, a team is too low? I just want your thoughts on it.
Well, my top three is in this order: Spain, Germany, and Brazil. Spain, to me, are the favorites to win this World Cup. I said that before this last international break, and they certainly did nothing to hurt themselves. They outplayed Germany in a 1-1 draw, and then, of course, hammered Argentina 6-1. I am enamored of that team. There's a bit of a question up front whether it's going to be Morata or Diego Costa or Rodrigo. And two of those three guys, by the way, were born in Brazil, which is kind of interesting. everywhere else, my God, from De Gea to that back line, Ramos, Piqué, Carvajal, Jordi Alba, to that midfield, Busquets, Iniesta, Thiago, David Silva, Isco, Koke, Saul, Asensio. I mean, the choices they have there, they have an excellent manager in Lopetegui, who is a very good hire. He knows all those guys from having coached them at youth level. And, you know, a lot of people thought after they went out in the group stage 2014 and in the round of 16 of the Euros that their run was kind of over. But it looks like it was just a little bit of a blip, and they've kind of reloaded, and here they are again. I think they're the best team. Listen, Germany have probably earned the right to at least be up there as co-favorites. But you're not convincing me that anybody has a better chance in Spain to win this World Cup. And then as far as the outsiders, what are the odds for Uruguay?
32-1.
Okay, because I might have to call my bookie after this interview, because I'm very high on Uruguay. To me, they're my sleeper. It's funny, because at one point in this qualifying campaign, I wasn't. That team had basically been reduced to Godin and Jimenez at the back, Suarez and Cavani up front, and not much else. Their midfield was a bunch of aging journeyman players. But to his credit, Oscar Tabárez, their longtime coach, recognized that there wasn't enough quality. They needed an injection of talent, and he started playing the kids. And all of a sudden, they have all these young, exciting players, the Maxi Gomez, the Federico Valverdes, the Lucas Torreira, the Bentancur, who we talked about, Arrascaeta, Nández. And so there's a nice little, the whole field's changed. There's a nice little blend there of youth and experience now. They're in an easy group. They should get out of it. Now, they are crisscrossed with the Spain-Portugal group, so they're probably going to have to face one of those teams in the round of 16. But I would actually pick them to beat Portugal if that's the matchup in the round of 16. So Uruguay, to me, are a bit of a sleeper to go far.
Yeah, just two things regarding the questions I asked. You know, Uruguay are a team that, you know, and it's funny, you have to mention this, they're a country of 3 million people, and that's the size of Connecticut, and they've already produced two World Cup wins and a beautiful amount of youth for generations to come, I would say. So, I think they are perhaps a bit underestimated given the circumstances that they have been for quite some time. But, yeah, they could definitely go far in this World Cup. And, you know, going back to Spain real quick, you know, I think the one team that perhaps is convincing me just much more just because of the way that they've been able to qualify and also, you know, the amount of depth that they've had, and that's Brazil. I still think that they're the favorites to win. I think Joe would agree with me with this one as well. I mean, you know, David, do you still make the case that perhaps Spain has the best depth or the best team in the world? You know, because we make the argument about Germany, how they could produce, you know, four starting 11s that could really go far in a World Cup. We talk about France when we did our preview the other day. You know, you can't mention Argentina or as well. Belgium, you know, with their amount of youth and experience as well, you know. You know, do you still favorite Spain in that case, or do you change your mind regardless?
Well, you know, I am Brazilian, so let me address the Brazil thing. By the way, one of your guys' name is Roberto Rojas?
That's yes, it. That's him.
That's me. You know, there's a Chilean goalkeeper, Roberto Rojas, who was involved in one of the most infamous incidents in South American football history back in 1989 against Brazil. So you have kind of an infamous name there. It reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where Lane's dating a guy with the same name as a serial killer. So be careful if you're ever in Brazil and people will overhear your name. But on the topic of Brazil, listen, I love everything they're doing. I love Chichi. This is the best coach we've had in my lifetime. And yeah, the team is really rounding into shape nicely. I would be careful about reading too much into that Germany result last week, because Brazil was clearly, for obvious reasons, more concerned about the result of that game than Germany was. Even minus Neymar, we played closer to our full-strength lineup, and Chichi only made one sub the whole game while Germany made a bunch. So they were treating it like a friendly. We were treating it like a revenge World Cup semifinal type situation. So, I like everything about this team. We're right up there. I mean, I'd put them right there with, to me, Spain, Germany, and Brazil have separated themselves as the clear-cut three favorites. And, yeah, I like Spain a little bit more than Brazil right now. But Brazil could definitely win this World Cup. But certainly, it's nice to have a Brazil squad that feels like Brazil again, because the last two World Cups, I think, on paper, two of the least talented squads Brazil have ever sent to a World Cup. People still tried to act like we were the favorites, but I didn't buy it. I mean, you look at that team in 2014, and you have guys like Fred and Joe playing at striker and flanked by Hulk, and Bernard started the World Cup semifinal against Germany, the 7-1. You've got David Luiz starting at the back. It's a whole different feel this time around. You look at that squad up and down, and there's a ton of pedigree. It's big-time players. You've got Jesus and Firmino, who, by the way, are going to be going head-to-head this week in the Champions League. They're going to be the two strikers up there. Neymar, Douglas Costa, Coutinho, Willian. So loaded with talent everywhere. Casemiro, Fernandinho, Paulinho anchoring that midfield. Thiago Silva, Marquinhos Miranda at the back, Danny Alves, Marcelo. Great goalkeepers, too, with Alisson and Ederson. So, yeah, it's a very complete squad. I like it. And yeah, I didn't mean to be dismissive of my own country. I think Brazil right up there, too, with a chance to win it.
You know, it's amazing the amount of talent. We talked about this recently, too. With Brazil, you tend to forget how good defensively they really are. With the likes that you mentioned, like Thiago Silva, Miranda, Marquinhos. You got Dani Alves that can run up and down that wing. We've seen him do that plenty of times. Alexandro Marcelo, who's one of my favorite players in the world, even though I don't want to say I'm a Real Madrid hater, but I would prefer they not win, and especially tomorrow, I really prefer that. But I absolutely love Marcelo and the way he plays and the style. And then, like you said, with the two goalkeepers, let me ask you this. Who would you rather see, Ederson or Alisson, playing in goal for them? Because, I mean, Ederson, you know, his game is multidimensional, but Alisson is a shot stopper. I mean, it's hard to argue against him.
Yeah, I know a lot of Premier League folk ask me this question, that they're incredulous that Ederson isn't starting, but
they haven't watched Alisson. I mean, he's been...
Yeah, exactly. You can make a case for Ederson, but the way they ask me the question annoys me, because it's obvious that they're oblivious to how amazing Alisson has been this season. He's basically the David De Gea of Serie A.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably been worth like 10 points for Roma this season. He's the reason they're still playing in the Champions League right now. They should have lost that first leg to Shakhtar like 5-1. Mm-hmm. They should have lost a game to Atletico Madrid way back on match. They won like 3 or 4-0, and they wouldn't have even gotten out of their group, and he stood in his head that day. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think you go with a better shot stopper, and he's been the starter. He's certainly done nothing to lose the job. I like Ederson. He's a great one for the future, but I think he'll have to settle for the number two role in this World Cup. Yeah. And the other thing that a lot of Premier League folk bring up to me a lot is, why isn't Firmino starting instead of Jesus? And he has had the better season at club level, but Jesus is a better fit for the way Brazil play. With Liverpool, Firmino's flanked by Salah and Mane, different type of players that like to make these diagonal runs into the box without the ball. Makes sense to have that kind of playmaking forward that's going to drop back. But with Brazil, those players at those spots are Neymar, Coutinho, Willian. They're more playmakers that are going to carry the ball from deep. And you want that more traditional center forward that's going to make incisive runs into the box. So Jesus is a better fit for Brazil than Firmino is.
Yeah, you'd almost argue that the way Liverpool changed the way they played once they moved Coutinho on to Barcelona, that it really fit Roberto Firmino's style a little better now. And really, when you look at the Brazilian side, it's more Manchester City. It's more the way that they're going to play, which obviously fits Gabriel Jesus. And going back to your Alisson point, I would argue right now he's absolutely the best goalie in the Serie A. And arguably one of the top five goalkeepers in the world right now. I don't even think it's arguable. I think this season he's been one of the top five goalkeepers in the world. And
I'm with you 100%. Yeah,
no
doubt
about it.
Definitely top five.
So I want to close out with one last question, because obviously as the stat man, you know, it's in your name. You're supposed to know these things, right? So we'll make it easy though. I mean, obviously give us a stat, cause you've been working on it, whether it be Champions League or World Cup, cause I know they're both on your plate heavily right now, that maybe no one's heard yet that you can think of that maybe you discovered the last couple days.
I came across a mind boggling stat on Twitter today, that Messi with his goal this weekend became the player in this century with the most La Liga goals as a substitute.
Really?
Wow.
Which, for a guy that starts 99.9% of the games he's involved in, is about the most mind-boggling thing I've ever heard. I'm going to have to check that one out and make sure it's true. But hey, listen, I saw it on Twitter, so it must be true.
Yeah, right. Well, and listen, you know, with that kind of stat, I'm waiting for Messi to just put a pair of goalkeeper gloves on and step between the pipes, because, you know, he's the greatest when he starts. He's obviously the greatest off the bench now with that kind of stat. So, I mean, he must be able to – I'd put him at center back and see what happens at this point.
I would say he would probably keep the most clean sheets in Liga history if you put it close on him.
You know, it starts to remind you. You remember that Saturday Night Live skit with the Chicago Bears? That, you know, it would be like the Bear, you know, Ditka versus Jesus Christ, and Ditka would win by 16 or something like that. It reminds you of something like that. It's one of those kinds of stats. So, David, thanks again for coming on the show tonight and joining us. You know, I really appreciate it. I look forward to the time when you're back on SiriusXM. You know, ripping it up. And in the meantime, you know, give Alexi Lalas trouble, because we've Twitter shamed him a million times to come on and he still hasn't responded. So if you wouldn't mind doing the inside job for us, we'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure coming on. Thanks for having me on. And I will definitely, I'll say hi to Eric and I'll tell Alexi to come on with you guys.
We appreciate that, man. Thank you so much. Talk soon. Have a good one.
Thanks. All right. Bye.
David Mossy from Fox Sports. Just a fantastic interview, and like I said, you know, I'm lucky enough to have the ability to listen to these guys in SiriusXM, and always enjoyed him and Eric, and like I said, Eric impressed me when we had him on the show, and then getting to listen to him in the show that he did with David was phenomenal. So to get to listen to those guys and get to talk to David is certainly a treat for me. So
definitely,
you know, very excited for that.
I need to get SiriusXM.
Yeah, dude. I literally told you this before we started, and if Matt Santangelo hears this, I'm not sucking up to him because I know we have pretty good access to Matt, which is another blessing for what we do. But Matt was coming on to Counterattack with Tony Meola and Dunny, who we've had both of them on this show. And I couldn't stream. My subscription wouldn't allow me to stream SiriusXM. I could only listen to it in the car. And I'm like, you know what? I've had it. So I called SiriusXM today. I actually added the streaming option on so that I could listen. But of course, the interview was going on when we were prepping for this show. So I'll have to catch it. But the nice thing about the streaming app is you get to go back and listen after. So I can nice. I can go back and listen to the interview. I'll just call it up and check it out. So let's you got to get SiriusXM. It's definitely worth it. Let's so let's wrap up. You know, Rob, real quick, we'll run through the Champions League just quickly to give some winners for tomorrow, or for tomorrow and Wednesday. And we're going to do first legs. We're not going to go overall. But first leg, Liverpool City. It's at Anfield. What do you think's going to happen?
Draw. I think it's going to be a really good battle between really good attacks. And I wouldn't be surprised if this ends like a 2-2 or 3-3. But yeah. I'm going for a draw. I don't see a winner in this one yet.
I don't see a winner in it either. I agree with you 100%. Juve Real Madrid.
This game's at the J Stadium, right?
Yes, it is.
You know what? Juve. I think Juve wins this one.
I
won't give a score, but I think they'll win this one.
I'm almost thinking draw, but Juve, the way they've been playing lately, it's either they've been absolutely destroying or they're actually just doing just enough to tie, you know.
But they have—that's the thing, though. But they haven't lost at home in a long time.
I know.
As well,
I know.
That's the thing. That's why I'm siding with history just a little bit.
You know, I think missing Pjanic and actually missing Benatia too. Think about it. So they're going to have to run the middle with guys like Barzagli and Chiellini. You might see Rugani in there, but Rugani played against England. He played the full 90 alongside Bonucci for Italy against England, and I thought he credited himself pretty well. So. I think there's a chance that Rugani could come in and surprise here, but it's going to be tough. That's why I'm thinking it might be like a 1-1 draw, which is going to be, you know, almost like it's the same situation as the Spurs situation, going back to England and you know, needing a victory. But I mean, obviously they got it there, but they're going to have to go to the Bernabeu to try and get a victory at that point. It's going to be tough for them. Sevilla Bayern. This one is in Spain. This is at Sevilla. I think Bayern wins this, Rob. I think this could be like a 2-1, you know, something simple like that. I don't think it's going to be 6-0. I don't think it's going to be, you know, Der Klassiker from the weekend. But
well,
I don't see a Sevilla side giving up that many goals. I 2-1, 3-1 tops, I think, for Bayern. But I don't I think it will be enough that you'll look at this match and go, you know what, that tie's over.
2-0 Bayern.
2-0 Bayern, yeah. And then the last one, Barca Roma. We dumped a ton of praise on Alisson, and we know what he can provide. Obviously, this is at the Nou Camp on Wednesday, and Barca just don't lose, man. They just
I think it's a battle of two great goalkeepers as well. You know, you can't talk about. I think many people are starting to maybe downplay him or something like that. But, you know, you have to give some mention to Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, don't you think, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. You know, and he's been playing, and not for nothing, you know, the one thing about Barca that we never talk about is the fact that they're playing good defensively. You know, Samuel Umtiti, you know, Gerard Piqué, they're really doing it, you know, on the back line as well. So, and I think Ter Stegen, you know, adds himself to that. So, I not to forget Ter Stegen. I think Alisson's a better keeper, and right now the way they're both playing, you're not going to have a bad choice or a wrong choice. But I tend to lean to Alisson over Ter Stegen at the moment. But I mean, you're talking about this chunk of gold or this chunk of gold. You know, which chunk of gold do you want? Still gold. So
exactly. Yeah. So it's a win-win regardless.
Right.
But You know what? Yeah, I'll pick Barcelona in this one.
Yeah, I think
I think it's going to be as tight, maybe compared to that Chelsea game. But I think Barca win this one.
I think Barca wins this as well. But I start to wonder if Roma steals an away goal here, if they could do some damage going back to Rome, to the Stadio Olimpico.
Definitely.
You know, so that's the fear I think for Barca in this one is the 2-1 victory. You know what I mean? 2-0 is a totally different world, but I think 2-1 is totally different for them. So we'll have to see what happens. So, all right. And also, you know, we've got Europa League coming up this week on Thursday as well. That one is also in the quarterfinals. Just quickly going to mention a couple of the matchups there as soon as I can get them up on my screen. But you're talking RB Leipzig, Marseille, Arsenal, CSK, Moscow, Atleti Sporting, and Lazio Salzburg. So we'll have to keep an eye on that for Thursday as well. And obviously next week we'll come back and give you the full rundown and talk about the second legs and all of that stuff. So let's go to our special topics this week, Rob. Let's start talking about that stuff. We obviously talked about the Champions League and we talked about Europa quickly. Let's talk about the league stuff real quick, because we're in a position right now where we could have two champions crowned next week, our first two champions of the season. That would be obviously Manchester City, which would be fitting in the Manchester Derby, and Bayern Munich, who was hoping to do it this weekend to really rub it in the face, but Schalke kind of messed up that party with their victory, so they had to wait one more week. First things first to you, Rob. Do we see one of them win? Do we see both of them win their championships? Or do we see none of them?
And Bayern need to win. They don't have to depend on any result. They could just win game.
Both teams, I believe, win and win straight out.
Well, looking at the opponents that Bayern are facing, they're playing Oxford, you know, a team that are currently mid-table with 36 points. You would have to favor them to win the Bundesliga this weekend. In terms of City and Manchester United, yeah, I mean, I still feel Manchester United could probably steal something in this game. I mean, you know, it would be unfortunate, but I still think that this league is probably, it gives another week to say. But you know what? Yeah. I think they both end on Saturday.
You know,
I just think that this team is just, both of them are too strong, but I feel that I still feel that both of them are able to capture the title this weekend.
I think you're right. I do think, you know, obviously getting to play that match at the Etihad for City, I think is a nice little bonus there. But I don't think United has enough. And granted, you know, United's actually playing better. They obviously beat Chelsea 2-1. At home, and they also end up beating Liverpool 2-1 at home before the break. So this is a team that's beaten some quality opponents. I know we could talk about Chelsea, but we're not going to bother tonight. But, you know, they've beaten some quality opponents here. There's no reason to think that that they couldn't beat City or at least draw. But City is just playing so, so well right now. They dumped 5 on Leicester, 3 on Arsenal. You know, they beat, the close one was City-Chelsea 1-0. But 2 against Stoke, another 3-1 against Everton on the weekend, where many were picking Everton to possibly upset the apple cart and maybe even draw that match. But yeah, City to me right now, it just seems a little too strong to do it. Going back to the Bundesliga one, obviously, like you had said, with Bayern playing Augsburg, you know, mid-table is actually not terrible, because mid-table, and I just want to go and confirm my information here, you know, mid-table is 10 points out from the Champions League, believe it or not, in the Bundesliga. That's how tight this particular league has gone this year. But Bayern just flexing their muscle. I mean, they did drop the 2-1 to Leipzig before the break, but just the 6-0 against Dortmund. You look at that, you look at their ability to play Sevilla, you know, keeping themselves up and playing at a higher level going into the Augsburg's match. I don't see them losing that match. So I think we get two champions this weekend, and then we'll have to check. We'll have to keep an eye on the Swansea. I'm sorry, PSG. We'll have to keep an eye on PSG and when they can wrap up their title. They did win the Coupe de la Ligue this weekend against Monaco. And then we're going to have to wait a little while on Barca, and we're going to definitely have to wait a long while on the Juve-Napoli situation in the Serie A. So it'll be interesting. We'll put two crowns on two heads coming up this weekend. Rob, I'm going to hand the mic to you, because one of the things we want to talk about this weekend is Copa Libertadores coming up. We're returning to all our league all our league matches, and Libertadores is one of them. So I want to give the mic to you to talk about Libertadores for a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. In Copa Libertadores, we have a few games to mention in this one. I think the big one that I've been able to look out for in this tie is an all Brazilian derby happening on Wednesday. It's Vasco da Gama against Cruzeiro, two teams that are hoping to bounce back from their losses in the Copa Libertadores. I think that's a big one to definitely look out for. I think another matchup that I think, you know, I guess part of the new fan club that we've joined is Lautaro Martinez. You know, takes on Universidad de Chile at 8:30 on Tuesday. It will unfortunately share the same time as another matchup in another continent we'll talk about in a bit, but that's another matchup to look out for. And yeah, I mean, it's still early days, obviously, I think, in the Copa Libertadores, but there's still some fascinating matches. You got Boca Juniors taking on Atlético Junior, two teams that are really good with great depth. You know, Teo Gutierrez on Atlético Junior, Carlos Tevez on Boca, you know, been dominating in the Argentine League at the moment. And yeah, I mean, there haven't been big ones as well. I mean, you have River Plate taking on Santa Fe. You have Estudiantes taking on Santos. Yeah, there's a lot of games that, you know, you could pick and choose of, like I said, you know, finding the best new talent in South America. And we've seen that. But I think the big game that I would like to mention, for now at least, is the one against Cruzeiro and Vasco da Gama. I think those are two teams, you know, it's a Brazilian rivalry, so you don't really see that too often in the group stage of a Libertadores, let alone the Copa Libertadores in itself. So I think that's the matchup that many people need to keep their eyes out on for on Wednesday.
What time is that matchup?
Yeah, it would be at 8:45.
8:45 p.m. Eastern. So yes. One to keep up. And obviously
it's before the Champions League, the CONCACAF Champions League, obviously. Oh,
good. All right. So, yeah, let's talk about that next. Because obviously CONCACAF Champions League returns this week. We've got the two matchups coming up tomorrow night, which is Toronto FC versus Club America. That's going to be played at 8 p.m. up in Toronto. And Wednesday night we have Chivas hosting New York Red Bull at 10 p.m., like you had said. You'll catch the Vasco da Gama Cruzeiro matchup just before it, before the Chivas Red Bull matchup. Just looking at some odds real quick. I couldn't find odds on all four teams to win the Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League. The ones that I did find is America is 13-10 to win it, and New York Red Bull is 6-1. I couldn't find odds for Toronto or Chivas. So I'm assuming by bookie standards, they're thinking that this that it's going to be America versus the Red Bull in the final, but we'll have to see them play the semifinal matches this week. And I've got to say, Rob, as far as MLS goes, I'm very happy with the way these particular teams have handled this CONCACAF Champions League this time around. They've really put their A teams out there. You've seen Toronto put out their best 11. You've seen the Red Bull put out their best 11. And I think it shows. I mean, unfortunately, Seattle was victimized by tons of injuries. We talked about that with Duffy Alverson last week. And it's unfortunate that they didn't have a better showing in this Champions League because of all the injuries. But you know, kudos to those teams for really putting out A-class teams, top-quality teams that they can put out there and actually competing in this particular competition. So you've got to give them kudos for that.
Definitely.
Rob, the other thing we wanted to talk about tonight is some coaching rumors that kind of popped up just before the show, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one big rumor that I talked about with you a couple of hours ago is the rumor that the Paraguay national team, who have not hired a coach and lost to the United States over the weekend, last week over the United States, over in Cary, North Carolina, they are looking for a top coach, and it was supposed to be a world-class coach, according to the federation. And the one name that I've heard from a couple of my friends over there in Paraguay, a couple of sources, that Tata Martino of Atlanta United, you know, obviously coached Barcelona, coached in Paraguay for various years, various clubs, and the national team for about a decade, is the number one favorite to go back to the national team as they prepare for the 2019 Copa America and for the World Cup in 2022 in Qatar.
And you think about it, we've talked about Tata here quite a bit because, you know, for me personally, I'd liked him to be one of the finalists for the U.S. men's national team job. You know, let me ask you this, Rob. If Tata is on your list as a U.S. men's national team head coach, we've had our elections here. I know many believe that we're waiting till after the World Cup to see what pans out and who gets sacked and who's available for coaching after that. But would you make a preemptive strike at this point, given the Paraguay rumor that you go and jump before the World Cup and sign Tata to be the U.S. men's national team coach?
I think it would be great, but you would have to convince him in a way where you could feel connected and have him have all the control to him. I think Tata has a bigger connection to Paraguay, given his experience and his history there, but the United States has to convince him very, very well if they're going to manage, if he wants to manage the club, the national team.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. So, Rob, you know, we've got some matches picked out. We've got a ton of matches picked out for this week. Closing the weekend with a bunch of derbies, man. And even midweek we have a derby. So why don't you give us the rundown for matches to watch this week?
Yeah, absolutely. Not just the week is on Tuesday. We have Juve against Real Madrid at 2:45 p.m. We have Sevilla, Bayern Munich, and the other Champions League matches at 2:45 p.m. Toronto FC, Club America, 8 o'clock, and Universidad Chile and Racing Club at 8:30 p.m. I think this might be the best day to sit down and watch all these games happen. Don't you think, Joe?
Dude, this is the best week. You know, because we didn't even put any of the Europa League matchups in this rundown for this week. You could easily stay home and binge watch soccer for 4 days. So it doesn't matter if we did it Tuesday or Wednesday. For me, obviously, it would be Tuesday. But, I mean, then you'd be passing up on the next matches you're going to mention. So, you know, let's see. What would be a better day to stay home, Tuesday or Wednesday?
Well, let's look at Wednesday real quick. Barcelona-Roma at 2:45 p.m. Liverpool-Manchester City at the same time. Milan-Inter in the Derby de la Madalena at 12:30 p.m. And Chivas-Red Bulls at 10 p.m. Oh, man.
And obviously the Derby de la Madalena is a reschedule from the weekend where Davide Astori passed away. This was one of the matches that was canceled because he'd passed away that morning. So the replay is on Wednesday.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, but tough to pick.
Was that
tough to pick, man? Tough to pick.
No,
day to stay
it's
on.
Very tough. I'm just hoping we can all see it.
Yeah,
that's all that matters. Saturday, you have the Manchester Derby and the Merseyside Derby at 12:30 and 7 a.m. respectively. And Sunday, you have the Madrid Derby, Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid at 10:15 a.m. So yeah, couple of good days happening in the world of football.
Yeah, and we came off a great weekend as well. And you know, if you follow our Facebook page, Fox Sports had tweeted out or had messaged out a calendar for April in terms of matches to see during April, and there were just some ridiculous runs of matches. This is the month to actually, like, I don't know, have some kind of surgery where you can just sit on a couch for a month. You know, maybe it's a good time to tear that ACL and have the ACL reconstruction done, because all you want to do is just sit on the couch and just watch TV all day, all month. So, and it's a great way to get us into the spring and into the summer. That's for sure. So,
absolutely.
So, Rob, let's do the trivia question again. Let's go through that one more time. If you want to give that to the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So, going back to the World Cup debate that we've been having all night long, there have been 178 different players that have won the World Cup from 1986 to 2014, and they have all come from 9 different leagues. Can you name the league with the most World Cup winners from that time period?
So, I'm just writing them all down right now because, you know, just going through the World Cup champions, 86 Argentina, 90 Germany, 94 Brazil, 98 France, 2002 Brazil, 2006 Italy, 2010 Spain, 2014 Germany. So Germany's won it twice. Brazil's won it twice. I wrote down Brazil first, and you said it was one of the top 5 leagues, and I immediately crossed out Brazil. So right now I'm leaning on Germany because their titles were spread apart so far. They were, you know, they're 90 and 2014. So, you know, I'm leaning on Germany. I've got this feeling, though, that it is some stupid answer like England. You know, it's something like that. You know, I think of Fabio Cannavaro, who went to play in Spain after the 2006 World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the team that they played at the World Cup.
Oh, so while they're okay, so he was on Juventus,
yeah,
at the time.
Yeah,
of the World Cup,
it doesn't count for a club that they went afterwards or during it. It was, well, actually, yeah, during it, the club that they were part of at the start of the tournament.
Wow.
You were still on their contract.
That makes it even tougher. I'm going to give you Germany as my answer, and I hate it because I really feel like I should be saying Spain, but I'm going to give you Germany as my answer.
38 different players have won the World Cup from 1986 to 2014 from the Bundesliga, and it is the second most.
Oh, is it Spain?
30 players, third 30. Most.
It can't be Italy.
47.
Really?
The most players come from Syria. Yeah.
Wow.
And here's a better one. With the exception of 2010, where all the players from the Spanish national team have either played in Spain or in England, there have been at least one player, and even going back to 1982, there has always been one player playing in Syria on a World Cup winning team.
Wow, no kidding. What a great question, man. That's an awesome question.
And I'll give you the leagues, actually. And this is you'll be surprised by some of this, actually. Mm-hmm. Premier League, 10.
Wow.
Bundesliga, 38. Serie A, 47. Liga, 15. La Liga, 30. Brazil, 21. Argentina, 15. Mexico, 1. Japan, 1.
Wow. So wait a minute. England is sixth on that list?
They are. There have been more players
from Brazil
to win the World Cup that played in the Brazilian League and the Argentine League than in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And since 1982. 86, my ball.
86. Wow, that's an amazing stat. That is an incredible stat and fitting for our World Cup coverage as well, you know.
So basically. So if you're playing in Syria and you're heading to the World Cup, you're most likely going to win a World Cup.
Well, now everyone's got to get on their Serie A team sheets and go, okay, where are these players from? Because then you're going to have to figure out, well, maybe, you know what? I think with that kind of statistic, maybe Argentina will win the World Cup.
Oh.
Just well, depends.
But you still have a German player playing in Syria. You have a Spanish player. You have a French player.
Well, clearly the argument that we've been making for a couple of weeks is you've got to have Mauro Icardi and Paulo Dybala on the Argentinian national team going to the World Cup. So
yeah,
there's your proof. There's your proof right there. If you put them on, they're going to win it.
Exactly. If you're in Syria, you know, they're the club that produces World Cup winners.
That's what I'm saying. So,
hey, you know, 4 stars on the shirt. So.
Yeah, there's a reason for it. So, all right, man. So, with that in mind, I think that's everything on the docket, don't you think, Rob?
I think we're in all set for a wonderful week of football.
Yeah, let's hit the closing music, yep. and we'll preview what you and I have got coming up for the week. So. Obviously, coming up this week, we're working on our World Cup preview shows. We did release France yesterday morning. We have done 20 of 32 teams for the World Cup and planning on doing at least two more this week. So, for episode 197 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to David Mossy for joining us tonight. I am your host, Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.